Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, December 3rd, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 207. I am your host, Austin Walker. Joining me today, we have a nice, intimate, you know, quiet cast today. Just three of us here today. Danielle Riendo, how are you doing here in the studio in Lobby 1 in Brooklyn, New York?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming
really
on.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
And coming in from Chicago, Patrick Klepek.
When are we watching more Neon Genesis Evangelion?
Patrick, we told you after you finish your dinner, we can watch another episode of Ava. You got to eat all
eat your peas.
So if you eat your peas, we can watch Shinji get in the robot again.
No, it's with Jessica, it's carrots. If she, the way I make it work is if she want, like, she really likes eating cheese, and so it's like, all right. And she will eat carrots like on her own, but if she's being stubborn, it's like, all right, take two bites out of this carrot. She just tear into a big, it's not even small carrot. She just takes a big ass carrot and just, I'm like, careful of those teeth.
Yeah.
It's a while before you get that second set.
Yeah,
chipped one of them when you trip, so jeez. Careful.
Then you give her the cheese.
Not shy.
Then she gets the
cheese. Then I give her the cheese.
All right, that's good. Earn that cheese. You got to earn that
cheese. Yeah, earn that cheese.
That's what I'm about. I'm about earning that cheese in life.
Oh, God.
Eat them carrots, earn that cheese, you know. What do we got going on today? It's kind of a nice day out. I'll be honest. Like, it's December, but it was like 54 degrees when I walked out my door. There were leaves blowing around. Perfect fall day. I just want it to be like this forever. I just want to enjoy the world. And I say that because I think we're kind of hitting a little bit of the December lurch of video games. We've gotten through the fall season, and now what we have, there's still stuff coming out, but it's not as I don't want to stay bundled up inside and play games as much as I thought I might right now. This is rude. I got Just Cause 4 code last night.
Uh-huh.
You didn't want to stay bundled up with it is what you're telling us. Here.
I just want to just double check before I lean in on
Yeah, no, something. There were in-progress reviews went up today. So.
Well, that's because, and this is the thing I wanted to be clear on, we got this code last night at...
Sometime during the day.
17 hours ago. It is 1 p.m. now. So you do the math at home, right? The embargo was when was the embargo?
Probably this morning.
It was midnight last night.
Sure.
So wow.
They sent that code out the day that you would need to
at
have.
Like 5 p.m.
Yeah, like 5 p.m. So. When that happens, it tends to be kind of a bad sign. I've only put in like 2.5 hours into Just Cause 4, but like it does feel like they're throwing it under the bus. And it
well, the last one also came out like in a December-ish time frame, right? This is like basically just 2 years out from the last one.
Three years out.
3 years?
Yeah, I was a giant bomb at the time.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So 3 years.
And this is also 3 and 4 are when... Avalanche split into two studios.
Yes.
And they have the Sweden studio and the New York studio.
This is New York studio. Three and
Just
four
Cause 2
been.
And 1 were made by the Swedish studio. Now that studio has been working on Rage, while the New York studio has done 3 and 4.
And the last studio, or the last game that the European studio made was Mad Max, which we did for 101 a few weeks ago. Jesus Christ.
Several months ago.
What I will say is it is fun to move around that world still. You got a wingsuit, you got a parachute. They've like tried to like tighten up the screws on the combat. You can aim down sights in this one, which is a weird thing to say, but it still feels very much like a game where you really have to know how to bring your own fun to it. So much of the game is about getting things to do with your tethers. Just Cause is an open world action series in which you move around the world very rapidly. In the first two games, that was primarily by way of vehicles. The second game added this idea of having a parachute all of the time and being able to tether to things. using a grappling hook. And using that grappling hook, you could do things like tether a propane tank to a car and then turn it into like a driving bomb. Or you could use it to propel yourself while you have your parachute out and kind of like pull yourself around the world. In 3 and 4, they added a wingsuit and they added the ability for your tethers to do weird things. So not only are you like connecting stuff, maybe you have a special engine on your weird tether that like yanks these two things apart or together, so you're able to do like special tricks or have like balloons. Like, so one of the early missions in this game is that you're like protecting this big truck and you keep running into roadblocks, or like in a regular open world action game, you would rocket launcher the roadblock apart, but in this case you like attach some balloon tethers to this old rusted out, you know, tank or whatever to lift it away and then you drive past. And some of that stuff is fun. It's very clearly has like, I think they're very much looking at something like Breath of the Wild in terms of hoping that they're giving players a lot of verbs and a lot of cool abilities to create player driven action. But it's super weird to see that brought to bear inside of very clean cut, handcrafted missions. You know, one of the reasons that works in Breath of the Wild is like you find that the world is scattered, you know, shrines are scattered across the world, and you go into them and there's just puzzles there and you put them together. That might still be the case here. I've only played 3 or 4 or, you know, 2 or 3 hours really. But the first one of those that I found was this very carefully presented, not cutscene driven, but dialogue driven. There was dialogue. There were characters talking to me through my radio about how to drop this big ball down a pit using my tether. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So we'll see. Like, I think it looks a little weird. It looks like a game.
So it's got tornadoes, right?
I haven't seen any yet. They opened
the weather effects.
They opened the game with like, you're going to take down the big evil weather machine. The bad guys have a weather machine.
Good.
And they're like, and the end of the opening tutorial bit, the bad guy's like, let's show them what Project Diapo can do. And Project Diapo is the big weather machine. I'm like, all right, cool, show me. I'm like, oh, I bet I'm going to have to fight a tornado, like, right out the gate. And it'll be, like, a cool abilities type thing. And instead, he just, like, deploys some artillery cannons and shoots you. And, like, I guess Project Diapo just got some guns on it. But you don't get to do any big open world weather shit right away. So I was like, ah, okay, I get it. You want to save that stuff. It does also seem to have the Breath of the Wild setup of, like, here are 3 biomes that are, like, here's the desert biome, here's the winter biome, here's the jungle biome. And I bet each of those has some sort of big boss encounter. It's cool to move around the world. It's cool to, like, fly around and slam your fucking stupid body into things because you don't know how the wingsuit works. But in a year where, like, my other open world game options also have cool traversal, like Spider-Man, or are trying hard to break away from the format of the open world game in some ways, like Red Dead, it's going to be hard-pressed to continue to, like, pull me in. I'm going to keep playing it.
Like that series has really struggled with trying to reconcile or trying to... So there are certain types of open world games in which, like, the edge on, like, bring your own fun is different, right? Yeah. Like, where the game is doing more of the work to tee you up for that stuff, and other games do less of that. And the way you're describing Just Cause, like, that sounds like a game in which I would not have much fun, because I tend to find... in games in which, like, all that is just put on you, like, go figure it out. I don't tend to have the sort, like, I've always used the analogy, like, growing up, I liked following the instructions to build a Lego set. I did not like just giving me a pile of Legos. Right. I just would look at it and just stare at it. Like, it just didn't go anywhere.
Right.
So often I like being teed up for things or following more along a path. And this series has always struck me as one that has done a poor job helping get players in that direction. It's more been like, I don't know, there's some stuff out there, but really I'll just have more fun watching, like, GIFs that people share and be like, I don't know how you end up, like, when I went to Giant Bomb, I always looked at Vinny Caravella and be like, how do you play games? Like, you are having so much fun and getting into all sorts of weirdness, but I could just never go down that path. I just, not that type of person, not that type of player. Some people are built that way. Differently, and then I think also that is incumbent on some games to help you get in that
100%.
Direction. And Just Cause, especially 3 and 4, where it's like, yo, like, why are you going in the story direction?
Right.
Like, all that stuff, just if it was being built explicitly because, Like, we're going to find ways for you to do wild stuff, and you're going to jump off from there. But I've always gotten the impression, I haven't played 3 and 4. I played 2 and liked it a lot.
Yeah, I liked
2
a lot.
I've always gotten the... But it felt like the lessons learned from 2 was, well, more of... There wasn't as much of, like, building on the big world and trying... Even if there was, like, there is. Like, it's not that they're not doing that, but it just seems like the right lessons weren't taken in sort of encouraging players in certain directions.
And so, go ahead.
I was going to say, Austin is now showing me a gameplay video of this, and this does seem like a little bit my shit, because I am that kind of person who... You know how much how I feel about immersive sims and verbs and just fucking around is kind of the most fun thing for me in a lot of open world games. And there's things like throwing the balloons on people to throw them up.
Yeah, there was a moment where
Metal Gear Solid 5 style almost.
Yeah, you know, is definitely a touchstone. Sure.
And blowing things up and sort of tethering to things and just running around causing, you know,
it is
mayhem.
When you get these moments where it does all come together for you, where like you do end up feeling like Spider-Man. It's kind of weird. Rico Rodriguez, who is the lead character here, in cutscenes often is portrayed as a sort of Spider-Man character. Like, there's a sequence early on where there's like an attack chopper who's like, I will say also, this is if you want to like fucking blow up some like super capitalists on behalf of some locals who live in like cool, colorful, tropical towns, this is that shit. Like, your army is all hyper brightly colored, like neon blues and yellows and greens, and like they all wear like dope sneakers and listen to hip hop.
Yeah.
And then you're fighting like the Black Hand, who are super capitalists who want to control the world's like environment for some reason, you know, because they're super capitalists.
So he's creating heat and using his wingsuit.
Yeah,
he's
totally
blowing shit up. This is just like
I'm
Breath
showing
of the Wild.
Danielle some footage right now, and there was a lot of stuff here that if you're playing in that way, awesome. The thing that I think is interesting with this series in general is you've seen them make concessions for more traditional action game stuff. So like aiming down sights is something they did not have in that last game. Because they don't want you to shoot stuff. They want you to do cool, weird tether tricks. But when in this game, like, you're aiming down sights, all of your guns have secondary fire abilities, like shooting rockets.
Who cares? Like, that just seems like
totally
the complete wrong takeaway from what people like. Go look at the mod scene for Just Cause. Like, the multiplayer mods for Just Cause 2 are, like, incredible. Nothing about that is like, oh, I'm going to go hide behind cover and make sure I can get a headshot. Like,
and
I really, like, the heart of this series has always been, like, the moment you're firing a gun, like, you're kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, it's shooting is part of it, but it is not supposed to be the main mode of expression for the player.
Totally.
It's more just a lower priority one that is mixed in with a lot of other things. And so the idea that there's been time, effort, value put on an aim down sights, like, seems to be like that time could have been spent building
something,
anything else.
Give
for that
me
game.
More weird abilities, you know what I mean? Like, just straight up make Rico Rodriguez Iron Man, just or Spider Man, or someone where like you just have a whole range of other cool, weird abilities.
You're allowed to do destruction in this series that is not so, like, if you're taking a superhero analogy,
you're not
going to be able to do certain things in a superhero game because they're like moral good, like they are trying to save the city, right? So, like, what if like Rodriguez is like, fuck that, I'm just kind of an asshole. And it's like, lean into that in a way that allows you to be destructive and weird. Be the superhero that's more like, what was the Will Smith one from years ago where he was like
Hancock?
The shitty superhero?
Hancock.
Yeah, Hancock.
I don't know why I know that. I don't know that I've seen that movie. I've seen the trailer a bunch.
I can't remember if it was
his
any
good.
His
head is going up
but
his
it was,
ass.
Is
it was a
good
that's
premise.
The whole thing.
Is that a thing?
He was getting like hassled in prison. He's like, if you want to see his head go up his ass, keep talking.
Does he do that?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
That's in the trailer.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
I don't remember. I remember he had a hat. He had a knit hat. Knit hat. With
he
like
drank
a, red...
a lot.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Yep.
But the idea of like a shitty superhero like is a fun idea.
You
and, like,
can do
would,
stuff with it.
Like, just let this dude get bit by a radioactive something, right? Like, just do it. Like, just go. Just
grappling hook.
Yeah, whatever. I don't care. Just like that. If you told me that's where this was going, I'd be like, hell yes, that sounds super fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to keep playing it. There's the one other thing I want to shout out that I think is actually kind of cool is the system for like expanding your where you're at on the map is about your army fighting the like currently invaded army or whatever. Or I guess they've actually already started to set up this notion that like the whatever this fantasy South American or it might be Central American. I don't know the Just Cause lore. I don't know where the fuck we are, but it's a fictional country is like run by the Espinoza family, and they are like the historical conquerors of it. And in the mythology that this country presents, they like came and deposed a brutal dictator who was the indigenous dictator. And already the one of the opening quests is working with like a local archaeologist who's like, I don't think that's true. I don't think that guy was that bad. I don't think the king was like a bad person. I think these are like ancient Spanish conquistadors who showed up and like invented that to control people. And so like that's neat. But the point I'm getting to is that the way that your army slowly expands is that you kind of send squads out on the map to slowly take over or to push your front line down, and everything inside of that front line is like safe and everything outside of that front line is dangerous. And what that ends up doing is they actually represent that in gameplay. So like at where the front line is a front line is like are like different people on anti-aircraft guns and big artillery units, and like shots are going, you know, back and forth over a river. And that ends up being like a really neat way to kind of visually communicate that there is a conflict going on in this space. I've played most of these games, at least a little bit. I played a ton of two. And, you know, I've played a lot of open world action games in my life. It's one of my favorite genres, even though I often dislike it a lot. It's one of my favorite genres to like engage with. And so something like Assassin's Creed Odyssey this year has very distinct and very like, okay, this is when a war fight is going to happen. And you go into it, and the Spartans and the Athenians fight each other for a little bit. But it's not happening out in the world in any real way. It's like the Athenians hold this region, and the Spartans hold this region, and never the twain shall meet until you've got enough reputation points in any given sector or whatever the fuck. And then you trigger a knockoff Dynasty Warriors fight.
Yep.
Like, that stuff is not does not communicate the feeling of Greece being at war, whereas when you're at one of the front lines here, it really does. So nice. I'm gonna keep tinkering with it, and maybe there's like, I am the type of player who looks at a bunch of Legos and is like, what type of cool fucking spaceship can I build out of this? So I'm gonna keep at it. Three did not work for me. I'm hoping four turns around.
Nice.
What else is going on, Patrick? Are you still deep in the dark siders?
I wrote a tweet over this weekend. It was just short, not much to it. It just said,
oh, a tweet, yeah.
I'm still playing a lot of Darksiders 3. There was no explanation to it. I didn't really have an explanation. I just wanted to put out into the world, I'm still playing a lot of Darksiders 3.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm near the end. I think I just have to fight the sort of final boss, I believe, based on all the icons have filled in for like the main things I need to pick up, signaling what I believe to be the sort of final sprint of the game. And yeah, so I'm working on a piece that I'll hopefully finish up this afternoon. That is kind of like taking a step back from the game and thinking about it in the larger context of THQ Nordic, who like confound me in just the weirdest company in video games right now, in a way that like I love waking up every day. It's like the sun rises, there's always a Trump tweet for something, and then there's always a new IP that THQ Nordic has purchased. I mean,
today
they bought Carmageddon.
proving
my point, just howling in laughter. It very much fits like the mid-90s like PC aesthetic that THQ Nordic is going for, which is largely because those things are cheap and the studios still own them are probably happy to give up on them because crowdfunding has become less of a way to fund games, and just selling it to someone who will give you any money for it is probably,
there was probably
a reasonable thing
window for people to do. There was a window at which Carmageddon could have gotten crowdfunding.
It did. The window existed. It got crowdfunded for like a revival. That window has just passed for a lot of games, unless you're like a certain top tier System Shock
or something like that. Winter time and the windows are all closed. Maybe if you see System Shock outside, you open the window a little bit, but that's it.
It's a crack,
you know.
And so like the pitch of THQ Nordic has always been, hey, we're gonna buy those old franchises that have been kind of ignored, and like we're gonna do something with them. And like what hasn't been clear since they started in 2013 was like, all right, well, like, what are you gonna do with them? And like it spanned a whole spectrum. Like there are some IPs they've picked up and just like transferred the Steam rights to, and they're just collecting the royalties on stuff that already exists.
Right.
There are other games where like they're picking up and doing like mobile versions of them. There's some strategy game they're doing that Jagged Alliance, right? Mm-hmm. Like Jagged Alliance is one they've picked
There's
up.
There's a new Jagged Alliance like this week, I think.
Yeah, them. And like it's coming out on PC, but like, you know, you look at the trailer and it's like, oh, I mean, this kind of just looks like a mobile game yeah. that they're releasing a PC version of.
If it's a good mobile game, I would love to have a good mobile Jagged Alliance game. So, sure. You know, we'll see. Maybe that exists, right?
Like, maybe. Like, we're starting to hit like the rubber meets the road on a lot of THQ Nordic and like what they are. And there's this, I don't want to give away too much of my piece, but like there's this quote that like kind of like set me on what this is, which is there's a quote from THQ Nordic's founder. I'm just going to skip Lars Wingefors. I probably butchered that. But anyway, there's a quote from 2013 when they started their spree, which is THQ spending $50 million making Darksiders 2. We can produce a product of the same quality, but for a lower cost. $50 million is ridiculous. I can't afford that. Many of our IPs will only generate $50,000 a year, but it's still money. Sure, it's amounts that EA and the big guys wouldn't care about, but now we have hundreds of IPs, and in a few years, we'll have a few hundred more. It will all add up to something bigger. And so the question like, at my piece is like THQ Nordic, like the pitch here is like, oh, actually, we can be IKEA, which is like we can sell you quality stuff made cheaply that actually undercuts the notion that spending more means better.
Right.
Or is it more, as Austin pitched in the chat, like, is it a Big Lots?
Yeah.
Which is like...
Listen, sometimes you need to go to a Big Lots.
You know?
I've since, in writing the paragraph, I put a comment that was like, I don't know if Big Lots works as the analogy, because like, Big Lots is like a value... But Big Lots is honest about what it is,
it is.
Right? It's like, yo, we've got everything and it's cheap as hell.
Right.
But it's honest about what that pitch is. I actually wonder, and I have this comment to me before I send the piece off to you later, was like, is it actually more that they're a flea market, which is like lots of things that are sold cheaply, but you also might be buying like aftermarket, like secondhand versions
stuff,
of these things.
Stuff
like,
that's been passed
you're not
down.
Actually buying the original, you're buying like a cheap clone of that thing. Because that's really what Darksiders 2 feels like. I used the...
Or three.
The analogy of a fan game.
Yeah.
When we first talked about it. And that if that's what THQ Nordic is ultimately going to be, is like, hey, we're gonna buy that thing you like and we're gonna make that sequel, but it's gonna be like the cheap rundown version of the sequel you actually want. That's not a very interesting pitch if that's just the cover for what the real business model is, which is what he is saying here, which is buying a bunch of IPs for cheap, making $50,000 a year off them. Because you're just making like the Steam sales
and the
digital rights.
It's a bulk buy in a sense. Yeah, yeah.
It's
a
bulk buy.
Well, like, in that way, they're almost more the Big Lots consumer than the Big Lots store, right? Because they're the ones who are like, yeah, we're just gonna go to this place. They're gonna have a lot of stuff for cheap, and you know what? Most of it's not gonna be great, but you know, it's a lot of value for a lot of bang for the buck. And every now and then, you go to a Big Lots and you leave with a coffee maker that's better than it has any right to be, and it lasts you for 4 years. And you're like, wow, yeah, that was a, you know what. $25 for this fucking percolator. You know what?
BL.
Worked out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. We'll see. Like, I'm so curious about what the future is for a company like that, because I there's part of me that, one, wants there to be room in the marketplace for games that are like something in that Darksiders 3 space, because that was such a sign of health for the industry for a long time, is that like, hey, a lot of games are coming out, and a lot of them are not big AAA games that cost millions and millions and millions of dollars. The pitch feels sustainable in a way that like, we need to make more big prestige games does not feel sustainable. But also, that needs to come with the expectations being clear to those dev teams. Like, I'm fine with dev teams being like, yeah, we're going to make something. It's going to be okay. I don't think I'm going to make a 98 Metacritic game. We're going to make like a 77 Metacritic game, and it's going to be
serving a specific audience that knows what they're in for and knows what they want.
Yep.
And
we're going to have some fun making it.
Right.
And that's it. It's not, you know, yeah. Yeah. And that's.
Whereas Darksiders 3, it feels cheap.
Right.
Like it feels like I've bought a budget game and they're charging $60 for it.
Yeah. Does the Blumhouse analogy make any sense here at all?
That's one I threw out before.
Okay.
The difference.
Yeah.
So the difference, like the Blumhouse model, part of the way it works is not exclusive to all of their films, but a lot of it is often like bringing in otherwise expensive talent and just giving them carte blanche to do something like with a wide canvas for real cheap.
Right.
In which like the financial model of Blumhouse is built on back end profits.
Yeah, they get points on the back end.
You don't make a lot. So the way that works is like you don't make a lot. A lot of way you make money in film is like you sign a contract up front. So even if the movie flops, like, hey, maybe you made $5-10 million or whatever the case may be.
Right.
But the way Blumhouse works is like, actually, we're going to pay you peanuts up front, but you're going to make points on the back end, which means like if it overperforms at the box office, and even overperforming doesn't have to mean very much, right? Like if it's a movie on a $3 million budget, if it makes $25, $30 million, like, boom. Like
you did great.
And if you're Jennifer Lopez, you can move. You can probably get, you know, 10 or 20 million bucks out of that thing, you know, in terms of like people showing up and spending money. I wonder if that's a thing that could ever happen in our space, right? Can we get the Warren Spector's THQ Nordic game or the Sam Barlow? Like, oh, from the person who made Her Story, we're going to give him a couple bucks. He's going to make a new game. He's going to make Her Story 2, brought to you by THQ Nordic. and you know, like, to some degree, like, I'm curious. I don't think that's what their model is. I don't know, though. I truly don't know. I wish I did know what their model was for like, if there was any sort of profit
share. It doesn't
seem
like they're going out and
recruiting.
Even if you take the profit share out of it, take that specific model, because I don't think it works as well in video games.
Not when they think that these IPs are going to make $50K a year. I think that kind of actually says clearly that's not what their model is, right?
Like, but I would be more interested, and it, again, doesn't seem like they're doing, but like, let's say they buy up Carmageddon, and then they're like, hey, we're just going to go give this to a weird indie team and let them go wild.
God, that would be so
that'd be awesome.
Taking essentially creatively bankrupt IPs and then going and finding indie teams who could use the exposure. Yeah. Like Carmageddon for a small, interesting team, that could be that is a worthwhile like exposure gambit versus like a more pronounced, you know, like a Cappy Games is not going to make, you know, a Carmageddon.
No.
But like, you know,
I can't believe Christine Love's Get in the Car Loser has been rebranded.
Actually, Carmageddon.
Colon, get in the Car Loser. Not that Christine Love is like an unknown name at this point, but I was thinking of indie games with cars, and it was the first one that came to mind.
But there are people on that level.
Yes,
that, like,
yes.
If they could just be given an IP, like a weird IP that is going to get back-end support for like, hey, we're going to handle all the business bullshit.
Yeah.
Just go make something weird, and you're going to get attention because you're making something weird based on an existing IP in which you're going to fundamentally change what people's expectations are of it. Like, that would be super cool and exciting.
I
don't think that's what they're doing here.
No.
Because Darksiders 3 is just like a shittier version of Darksiders.
Right, right. There was a game that came out this year called All Walls Must Fall, which is like a kind of cyberpunk tech noir tactics game that uses some interesting, that like, one, it's set in like future Cold War Berlin. Two, it has like some really interesting queer characters and you know, lots of like queer nightclubs. And three has like a cool like real time resolution mechanic where you kind of plot out your moves and then you hit play and everything goes according to the beat. And that's neat. And that team seemed capable if that game still seemed a little rough. But like, give them the Jagged Alliance.
Yes.
IP. Not, but again, I don't know anything about the team that made the Jagged Alliance game. I don't want to like undersell their ability or what their history has been or who they've made.
Let's just like assume the cynical version, which is like it's just like a crappy mobile game that is being used cynically to exploit the Jagged Alliance IP because it was cheap to make that, and then it's cheap to make a mobile game in Unity,
right?
And then export that to a PC version.
Right.
Like, if we let's just assume that as a baseline because that's not like an unrealistic reality. But if we assume that's like the version of what we're getting, like that's so boring compared to what it could be. And that's even true for Darksiders, right? Like, I would have been happy with a new Darksiders 3 that was like, look, we don't have the budget to make the big four horsemen co-op team-up game that we've been promising since the original. And rather than try and make what this was is like a crummy imitation of what came before, that is, it seems clear, like, it's unclear if it was design limitations, but it's explicitly clear that there were budget limitations. Like, what if they just made something, make a Darksiders roguelike? I don't know, something that's more contained, that is within the scope of possibility, that is more achievable. I would have been okay with, I mean, maybe it's not the Darksiders 3 I wanted, but I'd rather be, like, pleasantly surprised or even pleasantly disappointed by something that was different rather than, like, this, which is like, all right, Darksiders one chance to come back, and it's like, this is what we got? Like, that sucks.
Yeah.
They could put them in cars, Carmageddon.
Yeah.
There you go. They're gotcha. All about the apocalypse.
They are all about the. They could have just a crossover.
Carpocalypse.
I like it.
Patrick, before we leave Darksiders, I have a spoiler question to ask you.
Yes,
I'm gonna,
please.
I'm not going to say it out loud. I'm going to type it here in your DMs. I have a prediction about this game.
No.
Okay.
No.
You could see where that would come from. I'm going to say it now then. Can I say it now?
Yeah.
You don't like tease. There's not even like a question. So this is a game in which you play as one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. One that is not a biblical one. They've like switched some out. They've added Fury as one of the four horse people of the apocalypse. She's like a wizard who has a cool whip.
Of course.
And then you're hunting down the seven deadly sins. And I was convinced when they first made that pitch that Fury was secretly Wrath, which I think would have been a good twist. Not a good twist.
But
it could have been good in the way that Darksiders is this 90s comic book.
Right.
Like, bullshit, send up. Like, that I'm happy that, like, yeah, explore that space. Make Fury Wrath. So that's not the case. Okay.
No. I just fought Wrath for the second time, and I put him in a gem. So.
All right, well, congrats.
Wrath is just... Wrath did seem horny for me, but that's the extent of the relationship between Fury and Wrath.
A little bit horny.
Great. You know what? That's, you know.
Not much of a story to this game, honestly. Yeah. Like, very little undergirding what's going on.
briefly.
Danielle,
I came in and you were playing something that looked really cool.
It is cool.
What is it? Here's what I saw. I came in and you were wandering around what I would say is like a visualization of the internet if it were dipped into like a collection of vaporwave albums.
Yes.
What was that game called?
That's correct. It's called Broken Reality.
Okay.
It is a 3D adventure game from Dynamic Media Triad. It's the developer's name.
That's a great name.
It is a great name. And it is very much like what you said, vaporwave album covers just existing in 3D space. You are exploring basically a 1997 ass looking internet as it exists in a 3D space that you're walking around in. And that's where all the humor comes from. It's where all the puzzles come in. It is, a lot of ridiculous PS1 era textures, lots of neon, lots of blue, lots of purple, a lot of like malware that you later on need to use abilities to kind of like, you know, get through the world.
Yeah, I came in and you were like, you were basically saying while you were playing it that you were surprised that there were so many abilities and stuff. You kind of, I think the pitch on it that you'd read made it feel more like just like a more traditional walking simulator, quote unquote.
That's what I was sort of expecting for sure, because you look at this and it's like all aesthetic and it's like that would be enough to kind of carry this for an hour or two. I don't know how long it is. Right, again, I've only just dipped my little toe into it a little bit. But it is very much a really mechanically interesting game with plenty of puzzles. Like, for example, you need to sort of collect certain things and talk to certain people or certain entities. I don't know who's a person in this game, actually.
It's the internet. You never know.
It's just the internet.
Could be an AI. Could be an ICE program. Could be a bot. You know.
Yeah, there's like a pixel art texture of a dude, and you go into his little house, and he's like, do you want me to teach you the ways of... It's like a very, like, pseudo-Japanese, you know. There's a lot of that in here as well. It does look a little bit like a pagoda. And he kind of, you know, he's like, oh, well, I have a katana, but you need to find the three pieces of it, and that'll teach you how to slash through malware, which is basically a traversal thing. Like,
you
can now go to these other seven areas that were blocked by malware.
Right.
There's a portion that you're looking at right now, which is sort of like Easter Island heads, like very simple 3D polygonal, models that are like, they need sunglasses, a hat, and sunscreen because they're out in the sun.
Listen, they're out there.
Yeah.
The Easter Island heads are all in the sun all the time.
In the sun.
Help them out.
It's warm and they need help. So it all looks really, really wild. It sounds interesting. We heard a little bit of the soundtrack earlier.
Yeah.
There's a warp ability. There's like a lot of mechanical depth for this interesting and actually very rich looking and actually feeling sort of 3D world. So fascinating little game. I just sort of like got a press release for it the other day and requested a code because I was like, well, this looks wild. They just sent me, you know, GIFs and it was like, all right, I'll give this a shot. And I'm really pleasantly surprised by how much there's actually some depth here.
It's super interesting to see the kind of like trend of games looking at like 90s internet stuff. One of the what's the one I'm thinking of? Hypnospace Outlaw.
That's from Jay Tholen, who made my favorite game of 2015, which was Dropsy
the Clown. Yeah, that game is cool.
Yeah.
And it's super interesting to see a lot of the like hyper saturated bright colors, you know,
cyan and magenta.
Cyan and magenta construction under construction gifts. And I am genuinely. I think we ran a piece last year on games that did this from Zach Koster.
Yeah.
It's always interesting to me to see how we mythologize and consider the past in general and things that happened there. And like we've seen a lot of that in terms of the like, mid-century Americana, and we get a lot of that when it comes to, you know, various periods in history. The honorable samurai or the chivalric knight, we get a lot of that in terms of thinking about, you know, the good old days in various formats, whether that is everything from like, do you remember when you could fix your own car in your own home garage? Now you got to take it somewhere because it's all electronics. To, music just used to be better. People used to really know how to play instruments these days, blah, blah, blah. But for me, one, it's super interesting to see people who are from these independent spaces starting to do the work of kind of making popular those old aesthetics. But two, I'm just always fascinated by what gets remembered, what doesn't get remembered.
Yeah.
How is it that we all have a memory of like anime web rings and guest books and all this other stuff, which probably didn't have as broad of a reach as something like Facebook does,
right?
Certainly. But there are enough like touchstones, or when you see those things that are not that like, well, this doesn't resonate with me at all because I just wasn't on part of that platform or the internet in that way at that point. So I'm something I'm paying attention to right now is like how are we mythologizing the internet of the late 90s, the World Wide Web, the flood of people who came on when America Online first got the internet and not just America Online, you know?
Of course,
That stuff is all fascinating. Yeah. So the name of that game one more time was?
Broken Reality.
Awesome. And that's on PC?
It's on PC. It just came out a couple days ago.
Cool.
And by Dynamic Media Triad.
Awesome. I'm going to have two more quick things and then we can take a break. One is I went back through Hitman 2 and I did the escalation mission and the elusive target. The elusive target was Sean Bean.
Good.
He always is. He mocks you while you do it. Like there's a sequence in that where if you end up in the same place as him, he literally walks over to you and he's like, "So, how are you going to kill me? What do you think? Let's say hypothetically like you were here to kill me." And he's like, "Would you try to throw the knife at me from across the room?" That seems like a dangerous proposition. Perhaps you try to poison me, but you wouldn't know what types of antitoxins I was already on. Right? It was a very interesting so I avoided that entirely. What I did is I got a sniper rifle and I walked into the control tower at the Miami racetrack and knocked those guys out. And then I just shot him from across the level while he was in a conference room in a building across the way. And that felt incredibly good. And then I did the first escalation mission, which I've mentioned before. Those are my favorite things. Those are the ones where they add interesting little challenges that stack on top of each other and force you to really understand the environment. And so the one that I did was the first one that came out for this new game. It took place in the Columbia level, which is kind of like a portside town next to this big estate, this villa, and then a kind of these cocaine fields and this like underground drug base. And the way the escalations work is there's restrictions that get put on you and targets get added. So for this first escalation, what those were the first guy is like, okay, there's a guy in this cocaine field. You have to kill him with a machete. He's marked on your map. And also, you cannot be outside of the foliage cover for more than 15 seconds. And so it's like, okay, that's hard, but it's not that hard. So you do that one. The second person gets added. And the second level of it is like, okay, it's those two people. And the first one's a machete. The second one's a pistol. And it's like, okay, well, I have a silenced pistol, so I can get the kill. And as long as I'm far enough away, they won't see where it came from right away. So I'll be able to get away. The third final level is three people, the first two, plus one who's pretty far away. Third guy has to be killed with a melee attack, which means with like a weapon in a fight, not just like maybe you could backstab him, but at the very least you can't just like knock him out and then kill him on the ground. You can't throw a knife at him or something. You have to kill him in a melee. And it says, and you can't use the exit that's nearby. So suddenly you're like, oh, fuck, where are the other exits in this level? How do I get there without leaving the foliage for more than 15 seconds? Like, I'm like sprinting down the road looking for bushes to hide in. And it produces like a very fun, goofy, like, like restriction on the way you play. So that was cool.
Nice.
And the second thing, really quick, I can talk a little bit about Battletech and Stellaris. Both have had updates. I talked a little bit about Battletech already, but I couldn't talk about the actual new stuff. I kind of just talked about jumping back in. The Battletech stuff is rad as hell. It's a DLC called Flashpoint, which adds to it adds a career mode, which lets you just kind of do the career story stuff or without the story stuff, just like, hey, I'm a mercenary out in the world. And it's cool to do that stuff where you don't get the kind of injections of all of the special gear and money that you get from the main story in that game. You're just like, all right, I'm a mercenary. I got to make bank. And they've just made that feel more fulfilling. There's new maps, map types. There's like a new like tropical jungle map type. And there's also new mission types in general. Like I feel like I'm getting missions I've never gotten before, and I already had 80 hours in that game.
Wow.
And then there's also these new things called flashpoints that they've added, which are special kind of near end game series of quests that the various factions in that world give you. In the game as it when it launched, it was kind of really only interested in this place called the Periphery, which, as the name suggests, was on the outside of the kind of more traditional Battletech factions. Like, they were all kind of there nearby, but they didn't care about this area. Mm-hmm. And so they would show up here or there. It would be kind of a big deal if they were name dropped in any way. Here, with the flashpoints, you were a mercenary doing special requests for those groups. Like, one of the first ones that I got was to protect a shipment of a new experimental mech. And the way that it works is they make you kind of take missions in direct order, one after the other, without the ability to really, like, repair your mechs between combat. And that ended up being really cool. And,
seems
and
hard.
It's hard. It's hard.
Yeah.
And it's just cool to start playing around with the ideas of, like, reputation between factions actually mattering again. Because in the main game, in the original game, that just didn't happen. And the new patch or the new DLC both focus on that a lot, where you're really like, hey, I really want to be aligned with House Steiner or with the Free States or whatever, the Merrick Free States. And so, like, that stuff is really neat to, like, as someone who's a fan of that world, to actually get to dig into that a little bit more. I guess the last thing there is just, like, it's cool to play that game and for it to give me a challenge again. I've been playing with a new career mode where you're really low level again, and I'm like fucking around with really tiny mechs that I haven't used in a long ass time. And then even in my post game main save, the new stuff is like actually kind of hard, and like, okay, wow, this is pushing me a little bit. I lost one of my best pilots. That felt great in a weird way, like to suddenly be, because I kind of walked all over the last act of that game, because you're just so fucking strong at that point that as long as you don't lose anything, you're not going to lose anything, you know? And so to go back into that and have a great deal of challenge added and really cool new missions, some new characters, like that stuff all felt really good. So nice. Battletech, rad. I've only dipped my toe in the new Stellaris campaign or new Stellaris DLC, which is the expansion is called Megacorp. It adds like the most evil Megacorps you could ever imagine. all sorts of mechanics for like galactic trade markets and slave trading and all sorts of like terrible shit that we would be encountering, because we always did.
Yeah.
And like blowing it the fuck up if possible.
Absolutely.
Which gets into some tricky stuff, because this is true for like all grand strategy games or most grand strategy games, where they're like, okay, we want to simulate the range of possible things that sovereign states can do. And so you run into this throughout all of their games, including the EU games and Victoria and, you know, Crusader Kings, a game that has the word Crusader in the title, right? In which you are going on crusades if you are aligned to the Pope, because the Pope in that game can just be like, yeah, it's time for a crusade. Everybody give me a bunch of armies. I'm going to go kill a bunch of brown people.
Man.
And like, all right, well, I was over here just trying to become like the Duke of Sicily, but all right, here's some people, I guess. It's always tough, because one of the things that I think we can do one of two things. One, we can say no game should ever have a slavery market in it, because slavery is a real thing that hurt lots and lots of people, that, you know, destroyed cultures, broke up not just families, but entire, like,
entire societies, entire cultures.
And that gave wealth to people. It was an opportunity for some to build generational wealth of a sort that's hard to conceptualize. But also the other reaction you can have is, no, but it was real, and so it should be in the game. And I think both of those fail to engage with the idea of, like, okay, the process of making a game is one of abstraction and simulation. And so you can make a game in which there is a slave market or which slavery is a thing. I mean, Stellaris already had slavery. We did an 18 yep. or 25-hour long campaign of trying to eradicate it from our network or our neighborhood or our galactic neighborhood. But that's different than having a specific slavery market, right? Like, those are two distinct implementations of wanting to make a game about slavery. Yeah. I've not yet played, or not about slavery, but one in which slavery is happening. I've not yet encountered that mechanic in my current Stellaris playthrough because my head is just, like, not able to comprehend some of the bigger picture changes that they've made to that game. They've totally changed it wow. in some key ways that, like, if you go back and watch our Let's Play of Stellaris from this year, it's unrecognizable in some real ways in terms of the way, like, planets work. They're wow. just completely different. There's no more, like, Danielle, you remember there were tiles on every oh, planet yeah. and you put people on them and they yeah. grew, and that's just gone.
Wow.
There's now just, like, a completely different system for how it conceptualizes space and districts
populations.
Yeah. So, like, populations now aren't just, okay, this person is this race and they're working on this tile, so they're doing this job. Now it's like you build districts on your planet. Excuse me, on your planets. So you could have, for instance, two planets that look the same on the outside, but you've specialized one to be an entertainment district. And so it recruits people who want to come do entertainment jobs. And this other one is like your bureaucracy planet that has a bunch of clerks and administrators and
technicians. It's the way Star Trek works.
It's sort of like the way Star Trek works, or it's like, yeah, it's
the planet of lawyers.
Or it's almost, to me, they remind me much more of like real cities in a sense.
Sure, yeah.
In the sense that, like, okay, this city has a lot of financial district jobs, okay. right? Yeah. But it also still is going to have – maybe it doesn't have any farming, but it does still – in order to have a successful financial planet, you're still going to need a couple of entertainment districts and some good
you're
food
need public
imports,
transit,
public
you're
transit.
Need X, Y, and Z.
Totally, totally. Yeah. And so you end up kind of needing to balance all the population happiness and blah, blah, blah. I haven't wrapped my head around it yet, so I can't even give you a fun story of how those systems interacted sure. yet. And also, reviews aren't out yet, so I can't give you, like, my good final impressions. I still need to play a lot more of it, but streaming is allowed right now, so if I find time in the next week, I would love to be like, how the fuck do I play this game on stream?
Nice.
So yeah, no final impressions, no real, like, opinions on it yet, but these are the questions that are on my mind as I play that stuff. So yeah, that's me for this week. We should take a quick break. When we come back, we should talk about, like, game news. Check in on the world of the video
news.
You know, video games, they're not just Pac-Man anymore, and the industry is changing. So, when we come back, we'll talk about that.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
All right, we are back. It is Game Awards season.
It sure is.
We sent in our ballots.
It was the most Waypoint-ass ballot.
It was
beautiful.
Oh, my God. If you looked at all of our choices for that ballot, I am so...
Just throwing votes into a pit.
Protest vote all day.
Just take our ballot and just burn it, because it doesn't mean anything.
You know, I think maybe there's some stuff in there that was our... You know, some of our nominees are certainly on this list. So the way that works on our side is we send in who we want to nominate, and then the Game Awards, the Keeleys, the folks there at the Keeleys collate all of those that come in from all of the different voting publications. And then we get a second ballot that's, like, based on all of the various voting publications nomination, and then you vote on those. And you can tell, there are a lot of games that maybe we nominated that didn't make the cut here.
It's weird
that Battletech isn't up for Game of the Year. I don't know why.
Or Into the Breach.
Into the Breach is on here, though.
I'll take Celeste as a stand-in, yes. though. Like, that is a really, really terrific game. And so That's not the one I would have put in there. I think Celeste is a top 10 game of the year, so like I'm not totally upset with it, but like that's cool that it made one of
I just want Jeff Keighley to please rename Best Strategy Game the Best Waypoint Strategy Waypoint's Best Strategy Game of the Year award, cuz those games are The Banner Saga 3, BattleTech, Frostpunk, Into the Breach, and Valkyria Chronicles 4.
The Waypoint games.
That's us. So yeah, what do you want to talk about not just the awards, because like I don't want to go through and be like, here's what I'd pick in those things. We'll have plenty of our own end of the year stuff. But whenever it's Game Awards season, it's kind of announcement. It's like second announcement season or third announcement season in the year. And there's already some rumors popping about stuff that could happen at the TGAs, the GAs. I don't know what to call them.
Sure,
the Keighleys.
The Keighleys.
Patrick, do you want to hit me up with them rumors?
Well, it's interesting the context that this specific Game Awards fits into, because it is both straddling, given the news we didn't talk about in a previous podcast, that Sony is officially dropping out of E3 for next year. They'll be back in 2020 when the next generation of consoles like formally gets underway. But you know, with the PlayStation Experience not a thing, also because it sounds like they didn't really have enough announcements, or the announcements that they're holding on to, they're, you know, stocking things away for the next sort of wave of machines. This year, like, kind of is going to be a weird thing where it's going to be fun to figure out, like, is this game that's being announced a game for now, or is this a game that's actually coming like fall 2020 for like the new consoles, but they're just not going to put anything at the end because they don't want to act, they can't actually start signaling that stuff for a while yet. I mean, the one that I think people are like, at least I'm glad that Rocksteady came out and just said, yo, we're not going to be there.
Yeah.
Cause I think that's a game that people are kind of like holding their breath on for a long time to see what they're going to end up doing. I'm also glad that they just finally straight up said, we're not making a Superman game.
Oh, did they
come
out and say that?
They came out and just said, hey, we're not making Superman.
Huh.
I suppose that doesn't preclude
a Justice League game,
Superman from being in there. You know, I will say, like, what I have heard about that game is curious. I am super interested to see what it is. I'm not authorized. I'm not vetted that through other people to let me know, pass on what that is. So not to be that guy. I'm not trying to be that guy. But I am interested to see. I don't know much of the form of that game, but I have heard enough about what it is to be like, I'm super curious to see what that game ends up being. That's alongside they haven't announced, but it's supposed to be a big week for Marvel. We're getting a second Captain Marvel trailer. The Avengers Infinity War 2, or whatever that's called, is on Wednesday. And then it sounds like we're going to get a look at the Crystal Dynamics Avengers game on Thursday, which I will echo the exact same thing that I said about the Rocksteady game. I've heard enough about that game to be like, huh, all right, I'm interested to see what that thing actually is.
Yeah, because they've been working on it for a long time, right? Like, it's been...
Yeah, when it got announced, it was like, from what I understand, it wasn't like sort of, we've been working on this for a while, and like, we've got a foundation built. It's like, that game was like starting from scratch around the time that the actual announcement was made. And so there's a reason it's taken, you know, I think 3 years to get to actually revealing what that is. But like, they're an interesting team, like not a necessarily like a natural fit, you know, from Tomb Raider to Avengers, but you could see where like that leap.
Right, that's the thing I'm curious about, is do they make that leap? What's the leap? Like, does this game look like a Tomb Raider game? Does this game look like a, you know, is it
an open world game where you're your own superhero and Iron Man and all of them are around you? Or are you like jumping between those characters?
Is it
a game? You know, I think the question I'm thinking, and Jason Schreier at Kotaku alluded to this about what he said about the Rocksteady game, and I can at least allude to hearing similar things, is like, games as a service is like, that's the thing right now, right? So where does that slot into traditionally single-player games, when those traditionally single-player games are also moving away from like explicit... It's not like it was around like BioShock 2, where it's like every game needs a multiplayer mode, because that's how we're surviving in a world in which used games are really cutting into the profits of big-budget AAA games. So now we've moved into like this more Destiny, you know, continual evolving game where it's multiplayer, but it's just I don't know. It's different than just like slotting in deathmatch.
Yeah, it's like a bigger, more substantial thing, and that's what you.
Yeah, look at Red Dead, right? Like, look at Grand Theft Auto. Like Grand Theft Auto 5, we would have got. My guess is we would have gotten Red Dead Redemption
2
a lot sooner had Grand Theft Auto Online not taken off in a way that seemed to give them like 2 or 3 years of buffer room.
And the goal because they probably to make that again to get a second second faucet of. Online, like, money, basically.
Right.
That's, like, the weirdest thing about a lot of this stuff in general is, you know, Spider-Man is a single-player game. It, as far as I know, it's 100% single-player. There's no... Maybe there's photos or something that you can share, but, like, that's it. And so... You can see the case, like, oh, no, they can just make a single-player Avengers game, and if it's really good...
Breath of the Wild, that game is just a single-player game.
Though, like, single-player game...
Like, the death of the single-player game is, like, highly, kind of overrated.
Highly exaggerated. Yeah. But what there is a trend towards games of service also. Like, there are publishers who are pursuing games of service, by which I mean games where the primary income is not just the initial purchase point, but also ongoing... monetization,
season pass, this DLC,
new character releases. Here we're talking a lot about Ubisoft games: Wildlands, Division, Siege,
Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Well, does Odyssey? I guess Odyssey's just doing a lot of DLC.
Yeah, because they've had like
they've already
12
had...
or something in the last. I mean, they're
They do a mixture of a smart mixture of free DLC and paid DLC.
Totally.
So it's like they're trying to do both. They're trying to entice you with the season pass, but also like, hey, we're going to keep
Sprinkle some things in
stuff
for...
In there.
Right, yeah. Totally. But with something like the Avengers, I guess the reason that I think we're even talking about games of service is the Avengers is one of these things that's like, oh, that's somehow bigger than Spider-Man at this point, right? Like, the Avengers is the Marvel brand right now. It is the biggest thing that they have going, and... Because of that, I think our gut is that should align with the biggest thing that publishers think is going, which is a faucet that you can turn on and bleed for as long as you can. And maybe that game's going
to
be great.
And I'm just trying to because like it's not hard to conceptualize a Destiny-like superhero game. What I'm having trouble conceptualizing is one in which everyone is Iron Man, Thor.
I mean, that was the like Marvel, what was the Marvel Ultimate Alliance but multiplayer game called?
Yeah.
The
Marvel All-Stars, Marvel, what was that called? That got canceled,
I know what you're talking
and it was like
about.
A whole weird thing.
And there was that failed, I don't even remember what franchise it was from like 10 years ago almost, but that MMO that everybody was a superhero and it...
That was City of Heroes?
Yes.
And then they also made a different team or like some of the same team made Champions Online. So two superhero games there. But those work because like you're making your own character. You're making your own character. You get your own outfit. You get your own power, like power set. DC Universe Online did the same thing.
Right.
And so instead of just having Batman, like everyone's Batman running around, you had everyone was creating their own fake
Batman.
Everyone
was Batman. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
They,
it was
had
like,
purple ears.
Well,
I mean,
but I'm almost...
There's a world where they could do that, though, right? Like, there's a world where it's like, what if you thought of all the Avengers as classes?
Right.
And then there's a long lineage in history of, like, understudies and, like, passing of the mantle. And so there's, like, a world where, like, the Avengers still exist or, like, they're, like, a, you know, at the top. Like, you're not playing as Iron Man and the Hulk, but, like, you can play, like, a gamma radiation class.
Exactly.
You can play as an Iron Man
that
class.
That is exactly what DC Universe Online did.
Yeah.
You had your gadget, you know, powers. You could basically pick a combination of different things. So you could be, like, the gadgeteer who does the Batman stuff, and also you could have, like, some speed powers. So you'd be like, what if Batman and the Flash had, like, a protege, basically, or a baby? What if they had a baby?
That
isn't how it works, is Batman's powers aren't genetic, but, you know, it's whatever.
It's a conceptual baby.
Literally.
Yeah.
You conceived it. Yeah. I'm curious. We'll see. I think that's one of the more interesting rumors going around. Anything else that's supposed to pop off this week?
You know, I'd be saying From Software has a history, but they have a game coming out, and they tend to talk about a game at a time, so I doubt we're going to get...
Bloodborne 2.
You know, and I'm also holding fast to the theory that, like, Death Stranding and The Last of Us 2 are going to be the last gasps for the PS4, which, like, hey, worst things
could happen
to go out on. And that the Bloodborne 2 is, you know, going to be part of that.
You don't think it's a...
I mean, maybe that game comes... Maybe it comes out on PS4 and, like, we start...
Yeah.
Yeah, we get one of those, like, hey, haven't you always wanted a 60 frames per second Bloodborne game? Like, buy yourself a PS5.
Yeah,
okay, where's
done,
my credit card? Like, dupe, got it. Like, take it.
Briefly, Marvel Heroes was the name of the game I couldn't think of a moment ago. That was the online Diablo-style Marvel joint. Mortal Kombat's supposed to be at the Game Awards, is my understanding. Or, again, rumored
yeah,
Mortal Kombat 11.
There's been like, LinkedIn leaks and stuff.
I'm interested.
Those are fun.
I love those games. Even the modern ones.
I hear they're great.
I only play them for, you know, a few hours, but I will have a great few hours. The
story modes are, like, really good. Awesome. They're both, like, really good and deeply underexploited. Like, there's so much more they could do with the story. Like Injustice 2, like, I don't play fighting games, but, Injustice 2 had, like, a better story than Justice League and was, like, a way more interesting use of the characters, even though it has to fit within, like, the most ridiculous conceit of, like, making sure they're all, these two characters are, like, different characters are fighting, because it's really also, like, a carousel for you to understand, like, the basic tenets of, like, how every character in the game works. It's, like, a long tutorial that's also a story that's more interesting than, like, most of what DC has done in their, like, cinematic universe, and so... But I also think they could do, like, a much more ambitious, sprawling story. And as someone that is, like, much more closely aligned to Mortal Kombat than DC in terms of, like, characters I quote-unquote care about, like, I would love for there to be, like, a really expansive, you know, Shaolin Monks, like, style thing that they do with Mortal Kombat. So I'm crossing my fingers because what they've already always done has been good enough and it's been fun. But, man, it's just like, oh, like, I would really love to see them just fucking go for it. I'm probably, like, the last fighting game before
the console switch. Yeah. Some other stuff that's happening. Obsidian's teasing a game. Obsidian has put out, like, a little teaser countdown thing, which is that lined up to the Choice Award or the Gamers? Yeah.
It is.
I think we'll probably see that there. But that's a.
I will now be disappointed if it's not Space Shock.
I think it's Space Shock. It's, you know, it's playing in, like, a very retro aesthetic. Also, I don't know if you did you see any of this stuff. It's like
I heard about it, but I didn't actually watch anything.
You know.
Yeah, the teasers look like it's just a space version of, like, you know, BioShock's throwback.
Yeah, it's very much in that like. Maybe even just like a little post Art Deco, but like pre Atomic Age, like it's right in the middle there. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's actually earlier than that. There's one that says like Spacer's Choice and has like a spaceship flying, like a gilded spaceship flying away. And then the other one says like Auntie Cleo's. So we'll see. I'm very curious. It'll be at the Game Awards. But this is not a Microsoft Obsidian project. Obsidian got bought by Microsoft, but this is not.
Gotcha.
Yeah, Take-Two is technically involved in this. It's their indie. What was that EA? EA Partners,
right? Yeah.
That's where like Rock Band and other things came out of.
EA Partners was dope. EA Partners was a great
cool games came out of that.
And it was good for.
It was super cool until they realized they didn't own those IPs, and they were like, okay, like we're out.
This is Private Division, which is. Is it a subsidiary of Take-Two, or is it just connected in some, like, way?
I believe it's a subsidiary in which, like, they started handling the Kerbal Space. Why am I
program
the last? Kerbal Space Program was, like, the thing they've been doing, but, like, that was already off the ground. Like, I think this is, like, their first formal, like, start-to-finish project, basically, where Take-Two is, you know, working with outside it's basically like we want to work with independent developers, but like what does that mean? And so like the reason Space Shock is the thing that got me excited is because BioShock 3 has been in development in various forms for like a long time. That's been well documented, and Jason Schreier like recently reported that, you know, there's a new iteration, a very like that's called BioShock being worked on over at 2K. But a version of BioShock has been developed at Take-Two almost immediately since BioShock Infinite came out, and Ken Levine's off doing, I don't know, his storytelling Lego thing or whatever he's been working on for like 6 years now. And they've talked about wanting to make BioShock like larger than BioShock and like having Shock be like a big like staple IP of theirs. So the idea that Space Shock would be, it'd be a very natural extension of that. And so... You know, I'm sure Obsidian does cool stuff, even if it's not my thing. But man, wouldn't it be cool? Wouldn't it be funny if we've been sitting here like, the immersive sim is dead, and then just fucking space shot right at the end of 2018.
Dead. It's not dead. It's just being filtered out into little projects.
Yes.
Well, what is the budget on something like this? Is this?
It could also be an overhead like RPG.
100%.
It could also
another one of those in that model. It could be a follow up to New Vegas, but set in outer space, and you get a spaceship and you're exploring a solar system. Who could say? We could all imagine things. A little bit of other news. Some people suggesting maybe we'll get some Dragon Age stuff at the Game Awards.
I think they've already said
they've said there's a quote that from Casey Hudson in his like December update from BioWare. You already know we're working on some secret Dragon Age stuff. Dragon Age is an incredibly important franchise in our studio, and we're excited to continue its legacy. Look for more on this in the coming months, though I won't tell you where, or the coming month, though I won't tell you where to look. That sounds like Game Awards, but who knows?
Don't announce a
mobile game. That's my thought, because the phrasing, we're excited to continue its legacy is really open-ended, and if you're going to announce a mobile game, just say you're going to announce a mobile game. Just say we're working on some big projects, but we have some small stuff coming up that blah blah blah.
Right.
And I'm not again like I've weighed in on the Diablo mobile game, which is like chill, like they're gonna make the big thing. But people are not sure at all what BioWare is working on at all, and that fan base is currently with Anthem about to come out. Currently is like wondering how much they matter to this studio, and are not seeing other places they can go to find what they were looking for. Like, I think a lot of people were hoping that Assassin's Creed Odyssey would scratch some of like the companion and romance itches, and that there's romance in that game, but it is not like wandering around with your companions and flirting and bickering and bantering, and that stuff is so much like more core than the Odyssey stuff that is like hitting the heart button 5 times, you know?
For sure. I agree.
If they were smart, they would take a cue from Nintendo's trolling antics, mm-hmm. which they've like really perfected in the last 2 years or so. And what they would announce is like honoring the legacy is like, hey, we're doing a Dragon Age collection of like everything that we've produced so far. We're like cleaning it up. It's for consoles. It's for PC.
Put that shit on iPad.
Wow, we're doing all this.
Yep.
Right, yeah. Like all this. Like, hey, this is us. Like, putting all this stuff in a box as we pivot to the next thing. And like initially there'd be like people would be excited, but like there'd be disappointment. They're like, oh, that's what you got us hyped for. And then it's like, you know, cut to black, and they're like a very brief, just like brief teaser. Yeah. Like, especially given the way that Dragon Age Inquisition ended.
Did you finish?
Like,
wait, did you play that game? Like
I didn't like it, but I played it.
Did you do the DLC? Do you know about the DLC?
No. No, okay. I read up on like where it goes. I did not like the combat and all in that game, but I loved the story, and so I was just like, I'm not going to slog through that again. But you could see it like
there are characters you could put on screen, and you'd be like, "Yo!"
If all you need is 30 seconds to have someone say like a line, you know, and then cut to the title, and then just you know, see you soon. You know, like that's all you need to do, and like that would get people very hyped and like probably actually bleed into hype for Anthem, especially as that the closed alpha is
that's
this
coming
weekend.
Yeah.
So they're like there's a way where they could structure this puzzle box in a cool way, but I will say I don't have a whole lot of confidence based on past track.
Yeah, we'll see. I feel like there's their N7 message. I don't know if any of y'all saw that. They did the which was
that was good. That was
and
good.
So and that included the Casey, the
coffee cup.
What did it say? It said, I should be going or something. One of those. Man, what was it?
It's a meme from Mass Effect.
It's bad that I don't remember it. I'm literally watching Alex.
Hey, it's been a little while.
Navarro play through Mass Effect 1 right now. But yeah, I should go is what his coffee cup just said. I should go, which is what Shepard says at the end of every conversation that they have. And like, even when it makes no sense, even when someone is like, Shepard, you know, you really saved the day on this one. You really turned my life around. I should go. All right, great. Thanks. Thanks, Shepard.
Love it.
I'm curious to see what leaks out of that Anthem alpha. Actually, I don't know if it's NDA. It'll probably be NDA to hell, but I know how the internet works.
Stuff
reset error will be reset error, right? I guess the other thing is we should wrap back around real quick to the Sony stuff before we go deeper into the question bucket. Actually, someone actually sent in a question. So if you have questions, you can send them in to gaming at Vice.com. I almost said Waypoint.com. That is still a financial services company. That will not get to us. Gaming@Vice.com for all of your questions. Use the subject question in the subject line. This comes in from Terrell, who says, Sony pulling out of E3 and how will it affect small devs? Hello, everyone. With the recent news of Sony pulling out of E3, do you think that third parties should feel slighted? I can imagine developers who may be releasing later next year on PS4 or those who currently have marketing deals potentially feeling hung out to dry by not having that big push on a large stage. This, coupled with the fact that Sony has been mostly disregarding indie developers as of the last few years, adds up to not a good look for Sony. What are your thoughts? Is Sony making a mistake in skipping E3 as far as maintaining partnerships with third parties? Thanks for everything, Terrell from PA.
Well, after the tent thing last year.
Right. That's my thought, too.
I just – I'm sure you all have more substantive thoughts on this. But for in general, like it seems like they were already – they were trying go big or go home. Go big did not work super well last year, and now their E3 is just not a priority for them.
Yeah, I think part of it is definitely they don't have that much to show in terms of big first-party stuff at this point. The biker zombie game.
Days Gone.
Good catch. We'll be out by then.
Will it?
Yeah, that's like a month or two from now.
I've seen nothing about that.
Yeah.
They'll probably ramp up a little bit.
Beginning of January, we start hearing stuff. There's another press event.
All right.
And like Death Stranding, probably there was a Walmart Canada of all, you know, which was caused some problems last year with some leaks. So what I saw this morning supposedly had listed Death Stranding as a June release. Like, it would not shock me if that game was like their like late spring, early summer release, and that The Last of Us is announced for next fall and then gets delayed
to early 2020.
And then that's the swan song of the PS4, which would be fitting given that The Last of Us was the swan song for the PS3.
But like, they're not going to just show Ghost of Tsushima, Death Stranding, and
some VR games that, I'm happy for, but like that's, you can't necessarily hang. The headlines they get out of this, which is people disappointed about no press conference, is better than the headlines of, what a disappointing E3 compared to, a Microsoft who's probably going to be, like, pretty guns blazing between now and fall 2020. Like, there are rumors today that they're, in talks to acquire another studio that, in the recent Era thread, people were speculating Ready at Dawn, which would be like a smart, interesting pickup for them if that actually panned out.
Ready at Dawn being the developers of The Order 1886.
Yeah.
The like underrated God of War PSP games from
So a studio that historically had worked with Sony. You don't want to take that knock, if you're Sony. But I will say, to Terrell's point, I think I think probably if you're an indie at this point, you already know that the Sony marketing team is not going to push your game at E3. The last 2 years have shown that in the post Nick Sutner, Adam Boys like era of third party relations there, that shift has just stopped being there. Right? Like I've said this before, but like the PS4 was built on the back of great indie games and great independent developers filling out that console's like hardware or software library very early on in the in its life cycle, and in the last couple of years, like, I'm not saying there aren't still great independent games to buy on the PlayStation 4. You can still buy most of them there, but they're not getting stage presence as Sony has moved more and more and more towards these big AAA like themed stage shows where there's live music and flute. Exactly. So and corpses falling from the ceiling, happened.
Can't forget that.
That was a weird one.
I will say it's cool, shout outs to the Kind of Funny guys. They're doing a show, I believe, this Saturday.
Yeah.
What are they?
There was a press.
They're showing 60 release. Games. I think that was in the press release.
Yeah. I want to make sure I get it, the details right. But they basically cited, the Kind of Funny Games Showcase, which sounds like it started as a lark and then turned
a real
into.
Thing.
Which is Greg Miller's career.
Wow. Patrick.
I say that in the most endearing way possible.
But also, Patrick.
That's everyone. That's like, stumbling into things and like making the most of it. Like, I love Greg Miller to death. Yeah. Like, and like this, they cited this indie showcase as being like, hey, look, Like mostly citing the PlayStation experience going away, but this also plays into the E3 discussion of like, hey, like there's, and there'll be some indie stuff at, you know, the Game Awards and stuff like that, but that's not it. And that in some ways the Game Awards does help fill in some of these gaps, but basically like they're going to, showcase 60, all these games. So Saturday, December 18th at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time at twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. They're going to have reveals and stuff from Sega, Drinkbox, Devolver, Humble, Biffle, Kid Fox Games, Outer Loop, Future Lab. I just think it's cool.
It's interesting.
Really neat that they're...
For me, this speaks to an incredible... Like, it speaks to the strangeness in games media and games, PR, everything right now. Because, like, Kinda Funny is going to have to cover these games at some point, right? And I'm not... I want to be clear, I'm not throwing Greg under the bus, but I think that... So one, I think the Kinda Funny model is going to happen more and more in media. It across all sorts of media, not just in games media, not just the games press. I think one of the ways in which creative people, whether that is people who want to make videos on the internet or people who want to cover games or people who want to cover politics and cover environmental justice, are going to move is towards small funding models with sustainable community-driven content. All of us have at some point been participating in some group that has been community funded, right? Whether that is through like Idle Thumbs had a Patreon. I mean, that might have been after you left Idle Thumbs,
though.
I think
it was, but yeah.
Like that network has certainly always had a community driven model. Patrick and I were with a Giant Bomb for years. I'm still with Friends at the Table. Like we all know what the additional sustainability comes from having a community driven model. And I think that is so useful and so helpful for getting out of the kind of under the foot of the advertising space where, you know, Facebook and Google control 84% of the advertising market in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Which really you got to think through that. 84% of all advertising dollars spent. That means all advertising money spent on television, all advertising money spent everywhere. Like 84% insane. Heads to Facebook and Google, which is say like for placement on those platforms.
Right.
And so that ends up being a remarkable amount of constraint put on anyone who wants to do 84 or any other advertising who wants to like have for if like we wanted to have Coca-Cola give us money so that we could do a big end of year package, which is the way media fucking works and it sucks. We would be competing with numbers set by these other two big giants, basically. And that really restricts you. And so on top of all that being, it also means that you have to like adhere to what the models that they put forth, whether that's Google's SEO changes week to week and you want to make sure that you're competing and showing up in a high ranking there, or if you want to be foregrounded on Facebook to people who've already said they want to see your stuff, but because of the algorithm they're not going to see your stuff because for whatever reason your headline isn't in line with whatever Facebook this week thinks a good headline looks like. It's important to develop alternate models for funding for these places,
yes.
For media places. But I also think it's super interesting because for someone like Kinda Funny, or someone like Greg in general and the whole team there, Tim, like everybody there, to be successful also means to like be a supporter of your industry and the medium. And it also ends up meaning that you have to do some stuff that's like closer to hosting than journalism or criticism, right?
Yeah.
So like they did they hosted the Final Fantasy 15, like not reveal, but some big Final Fantasy 15 thing a couple of years ago.
It's kind of like advocacy in a different way than the sort of advocacy like,
yeah,
we
totally.
Do, right? Like it's from a different angle. Like there's just kind of a meshing or like in the same way that we're not just reporters or critics. Like we often feel like we're like straight
absolutely.
On advocates
for
like
labor
certain
rights
causes.
In this
and
industry
so,
is a big thing that we hammer.
Right. And so I think that like melding and crossing of different like roles, like is there's a different
yeah, 100%. But it's going to keep happening. I'm fascinated by it because when you look at this press release, Sega is on this press release, Kid Fox Games is on this press release, Biffle Games, Devolver, like these are companies that make stuff in this space that. There are going to be more and more conversations in a genuine way, I think, from people in our community, in our like small corner of the world. This is like a little inside baseball about what it means to be ethical at like genuinely and cover these games, but also support the industry and support the developers directly whenever we can. I think it's just fascinating, and it's going to be harder because as we move towards these models that are community driven, that are sustainable, that are fan funded. you step out of some of the institutional structure that previously would have kept certain relationships separate or whatever, yes. right? It's wild. And it's, again, it's fascinating. I'm not, this isn't a subtweet. This is me being like, yeah, I would love to do an event like this where we got 60 developers together to show off new games. That would be sick.
Right.
But it's like, okay, well, how do we choose those 60 developers? What's that mean for our coverage of those games in the future?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is it, do we live in a world where we could get away with just having a disclosure? Or in what ways are different degrees of disclosure expected from different types of people?
Right.
Like, how can – I've said this for years, right? But, like, at Giant Bomb, a bunch of – we were like – it was always wild to me to be like, okay, you're super buddy-buddy with, like, people who are high up at Sony. And no one is like – Jeff Gerstmann is an unethical dude. You know what I mean? Because people give the benefit of the doubt and say, okay, like, Jeff is an adamant – an honest critic who is not going to let his personal relationships get in the way of criticizing a game Sony puts out. Or a game Iron Galaxy puts out,
right,
for instance.
Right.
Shout outs to Dave Lang, right? But there are other relationships in this industry that were way more tenuous, that were used as a club to target marginalized folks and those who were allied to marginalized folks. And that fucking sucked. And so, like, that stuff is so fascinating to me, and it's so important to kind of anticipate those conversations and start thinking about them now, so that when it is sprung on us, when it is time, when something happens that catalyzes and sparks a conversation, you've already done some of that preliminary thinking and trying to, like, think about this from all of the complex angles that there are, so that when you dive into it, you will already have some degree of heads up and can kind of think about where you're already going to be at.
Yeah.
I think that should do it for us this week. We've gone pretty long already. As always, you can follow us at twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice, waypoint.vice.com for everything else we do. Danielle, where can people find you?
You can find me at DanielleRI on Twitter.
Awesome. Patrick, how about you?
Rivers Cuomo no. is going to be at the
Why?
Game Awards.
Is he going to announce a new game? Is there a Weezer game coming out?
I don't know.
Rivers Cuomo, Walking Sim.
You all heard my story. I have.
Are you going
so
now? Are you going to go see Rivers? You want to fly out?
I'm gonna tweet at him until he faves one
there
of my
you
tweets
go.
About it.
I heard.
Takes like
yeah,
three
God,
tweets.
God. You follow me at Austin_Walker. Real quick, two things. I want to shout out the devs, the mods at the on the forums. Forum.waypoint.vice.com, discourse.zone,
yeah.
who are currently prepping to do their own forum-based Game of the Year stuff. If you want to be, like,
Ooh.
Involved in the community Game of the Year discussions, you go to the forums. I don't think those threads are up yet, but in the next week or so, I think they'll be going up. And I've seen them putting in a lot of work to getting those categories right and getting together some really fun, interesting topics of conversation and exploration. So discourse.zone for that. And then I had a second thing. But it's gone now.
Mm.
It's gone. It's just in the wind. I don't know where it is. Who could say?
Sometimes the waypoints are in the wind.
Sometimes the waypoints are. Oh, I made a post in that forum.
Yes.
There's a thread called, it's like issues with the site or something, which is like initially like, hey, there's bad advertising, or like, hey, I'm getting a weird bug or something like that. And one of the things that came up recently was like, hey, are y'all streaming video games? What's up with that? Why haven't y'all streamed in a while? And so I went on a disconnect between forum and site is the name of the thread that I posted in. And I just kind of like broke down, hey, here's what our year has been like. Here is what our content strategy switches have looked like. Here's why we're doing more podcasts now, less streams. We're still streaming here and there, like when it makes sense and we can find the time
it's
for
applesauce.
It. Here's what our added, yes. here's, yeah, it's apple, it is our applesauce. Did I say, is that what I said internally? Is that what I?
You said it internally, and I just love it as
it's
a beautiful
our applesauce.
Image.
We
get
eat
this
our
applesauce
food.
Sometimes when we eat our
when
dinner.
When you eat your dinner, when you eat your full dinner yeah. at the end of the week, our dessert, our applesauce, which isn't really a dessert. It's kind of
it's
a
more
side.
More like a nice thing.
Yeah, it's a nice
I just
thing.
I think of it as a nice thing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. If we've gotten through all our podcasting and our editorial work. So yeah, go read that. It's I put that up there last week and realized I should shout it out here. It is the name of the thread is Disconnect Between Form and Site. It is the 19th post in that thread. It begins, hey folks, just wanted to hop in here and talk about big picture site direction stuff. So go ahead and find
there
that.
We go.
That's gonna do it for us. As always, thank you to Kato for producing. And follow Kato on Twitter at @A_Kato_appears. And as always, shout outs to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that. waypoint.zone/BOEN. Danielle, what do we say to him?
Be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.